With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Jason Lipschutz, and I'm an associate editor and the Pop Shop blog editor of Billboard.com, based in New York, on the other line, in Los Angeles, the speak now of the chart world, Keith Caulfield. How's it going, Keith?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, man. I'm great. We have a packed show. This is the second Pop Shop Podcast of the week. We broke down the MTV Video Music Awards earlier this week. Check that out on Billboard.com and on iTunes. But Keith, it's a stacked chart week. This is like your favorite kind of week, right? Where there's like number one debuts and sales projections for next week's number one debut and crazy zooming from number 39 to number 2 on the Hot 100. It's got to be it's like your Christmas, right?
I always love it when you say those things. Yes. It is, because this is it's one of those weeks where you have a big awards show, big new releases, exciting chart movement. It's kind of like the week after the Grammy Awards, where there's always lots of shakeups and exciting moves on the charts. And obviously, this is one of them. And we haven't actually said what those chart movements and exciting developments are yet, because, well, we're teasing you.
We are indeed teasing you. Before we get to everything going on this week on the charts, I want to point out that this is our first Pop Shop podcast without a special guest in a couple weeks, and the summer's winding down. I just want to thank all the artists who have stopped by the Pop Shop podcast. This is actually the first summer the Pop Shop podcast has existed. We launched last October, and you know, summer's always a fun time for music. We had people like Fifth Harmony and Nico and Vince and Hilary Duff and Jesse J, Jack Antonoff, Robin Royksopp, Shawn Mendes, Megan Trainor, I think, and Rixton, and they all came in and chatted with us. We had a great time, and we'll have more special guests coming up, but I just wanted to thank everyone for listening. It was a really fun summer. If you missed any of those interviews that we did, check them all out. They're all on iTunes and all on Billboard.com. So yeah, here's to the fall, and fall is kind of kicking off. It's not actually fall. It's still August 27th right now. You're going to be listening to this.
It's still summer, right?
August 28th. Yeah. It is, but it feels like fall because of what's going on in the charts, because, you know, Magic's Rude reign is over. Rude falls to number 5 on the Hot 100. And taking its place atop the Hot 100 chart this week, Taylor Swift's Shake It Off debuts at number 1. We talked about it last week on the Pop Shop podcast, but it does indeed debut at number 1. Only the 22nd song to debut atop the Hot 100. So let's talk about that for a second, Keith, how rare it is to debut at number 1 on the Hot 100. Only 22 songs have done it over 1,000 songs that have been number 1 on the chart. Why is it so rare? We talked about it a little bit last week, but why are there only 22 songs that have done this?
The long answer is, well, I'll try to whittle this answer down. But basically, like anything, it's difficult to debut at number 1 because usually songs start off slow and then progressively build and build and build and become big hits down the road as you gather more and more sales and more streams, and you get more airplay. You move up the chart. Things move up. Companies don't start as like the biggest company in the world. Movies generally start as like the number one movie over the box office, but songs don't usually come out of the gate as the most popular song in the United States, period. On rare occasions, the stars align and can enable a song to debut at number one. The first debut at number one didn't actually happen until 1995, believe it or not. On the chart dated September 2nd, 1995, Michael Jackson's You Are Not Alone became the first song to ever debut at number one on the Billboard Hot 100. And then we actually had like a hot streak for a couple years where they were like coming fast and furious up until 1998, where we had like a ton of number one debuts because of the way the industry worked at the time. Then in the 2000s, as the chart sort of settled down and we didn't really have sales driving the chart anymore, and we had new chart rules in place, which are kind of hard to get into without sort of going into it, the number one debuts kind of shrunk up. And in more recent years now, with the way the chart works with digital sales and streaming data, it makes it more difficult to debut at number one, but it still happens on occasion. We've had a couple since 2009, but this is the first one this year and the first since actually 2013. This is the first debut at number one since 2013. I don't know if I actually said anything that was actually like educational or if I just sort of rambled.
I learned a lot.
Sure you did.
A ton. And it's the second straight Shake song, to debut at number one on the Hot 100.
You are correct.
The last one was Harlem Shake by Bauer.
And that song debuted at number one mostly because of the viral phenomenon that it became on YouTube. That was the week that we introduced YouTube streaming data into the Billboard Hot 100, and that enabled Bauer to debut at number one. So it was a perfect timing of events when we introduced YouTube into the chart. That was the same week that Harlem Shake like went nuts, and so that song debuted at number one. And then eventually the song kind of caught up in terms of sales and airplay, but really initially it was a viral phenomenon. Taylor's case, it's huge in sales, huge in airplay, huge in streams across the board. It's a popular song. It's not just popular in one metric.
Yeah, so let's talk about that in terms of digital sales, streaming, and radio ads. It seems like kind of a perfect storm has happened. This song has only existed. It's pretty unbelievable to think that this song has only been around for a week and a half. It seems like we've been bombarded with it in that time. In terms of streaming, you have the YouTube and Vivo video that everyone's talking about. Radio, you hear it more and more, even in, you know, just 9 or 10 days of being released. And everyone, this is the fourth biggest digital song launch of all time. Keith, so, I mean, in terms of that, what was it kind of inevitable that this was going to launch at number one?
Not inevitable. It was likely, but not inevitable. Because, okay. Because initially, I think the sales forecast for the song was actually a little bit less than the 540-ish that it did. The song did a little bit better than people expected, so that helped. It wasn't as big as We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together's debut, and We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together was the first single from Taylor Swift's last album. So on the one hand, it's done, it started less with fewer sales than the first single from her last album, so that's sort of a negative. But on the other hand, it had a great week in terms of airplay and streams because the video came out at the same time. And I don't think We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together's video came out on the same day as the song.
It did not.
Yeah,
no.
So things were staggered with the last release. And this was designed to kind of hit you over the head with everything at one time. So, you know, Taylor introduced the song itself existing, played it for everyone, and said it's available to buy, and here's the music video that you can go watch right now on YouTube. So it was like boom, boom, boom. And normally most songs have a boom and then a boom later and then another boom. You know,
they have a boom and then a clap.
There's a boom and then a clap and then another boom clap and then another.
And then Charlie XCX just reaps the rewards. Yes. So one thing that a lot of people have been asking us on Twitter, I don't know about you, I think you've been tagged in these questions on Twitter, is about Shake It Off not being on Spotify. And, you know, if a lot of people, I'm sure, have checked Spotify, refreshed Spotify in the past week to see if Shake It Off is available for streaming yet on that platform. It is not. But that drives more sales, right? This is going to keep people going and actually spending the amount of money, $1.29, I guess, on iTunes to hear it over and over.
Yeah. It's. I mean, if you don't put something on Spotify, you know, and the general idea. I mean, we don't have an official answer from Taylor Swift or her record label about why it's not on Spotify, but the general idea would be, oh, if you want to listen to this, you have to either listen to it on the radio, listen to it on YouTube, or go buy the darn thing instead of just listening to it on Spotify. I mean, ultimately, all these things factor into the Hot 100, but you perhaps make more money this way if you hold it back from Spotify. And she isn't the only artist that has held back things from Spotify. Sam Smith kind of notably held back his album from Spotify for a long time. And I think Billboard even wrote a story about that, about the machinations of that and why it happened.
So my question, I guess, is why don't more people do this? Why, you know, you think about just this process logically, and like you said, we don't know if Taylor Swift or her label Big Machine has commented on this, but in terms of not putting this song on Spotify, like you said, like this is going to drive people to both watch the video more, which helps its streaming numbers, as well as go to iTunes and purchase it. Same thing kind of happened with Sam Smith and Stay With Me, which wasn't on Spotify for months. Why don't more artists and more labels do this? Do you think this is kind of going to be the way it is going to be eventually?
I don't know. I don't have the answer for that. I really don't know. I mean, maybe there's some sort of pure speculation. Maybe, you know, you have contracts with Spotify that don't let you withhold just anything. And they probably have to be very selective about the artists that they hold back. Or maybe Taylor Swift's contract with Big Machine and Universal enables her to not put things on Spotify. I think it probably depends on the contract of the artist and the agreement that they have, that the label has with Spotify. I don't know. I'm kind of out of my element there.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is all conjecture. It is interesting, though, and obviously it is still kind of rare when you have an artist like, you know, Miley Cyrus, when We Can't Stop came out, that it was on Spotify the same day it came out. Same with someone like Ariana Grande. Problem came out pretty quickly. It's just interesting because I know a lot of people who are big pop fans are like, why is this song that is number one on the Hot 100 not on Spotify yet, not for streaming? Why can't I add it to my playlist?
Maybe because they want to make a little bit more money than the, you know, half a penny that they're going to make
for
off
sure.
of Spotify. I mean, what's the pay rate on Spotify? Like a millionth of a cent or something ridiculous?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it will be interesting to see if this is kind of the new normal where people say, hey, we're eventually going to put this on Spotify, but Shake It Off is only a week old. We want people to keep buying it. We want people to keep streaming it and watching the video because there's ads there too, and we'll see what happens. And, I mean, look, it totally makes sense because, like you said, not much money is being given to the artist, to the label on Spotify. And I mean, stuff like that, little details like that fascinate me. And I guess we'll see what happens. I'm sure that Shake It Off eventually will be added to Spotify like the rest of Taylor Swift's albums. So my last question about Shake It Off and its number one debut, can this song stick at number one for multiple weeks on end, or will it fall off after this initial sales rush, after everyone in the first week says, oh my goodness, Taylor Swift has a new single, I have to buy it. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the sales are going to collapse. Not like fall off the face of the planet, but considering that she had such a big debut week, it's only natural that the song is going to have a big drop in its second week. I'm quickly bringing up how We Are Never Ever did in terms of its first and second week.
Yeah.
Just to compare. It debuted with 623,000, and then it fell to 307,000 in its second week. So it actually didn't drop by a huge chunk. I mean, comparatively, it did, but it lost half. But still, that was a significant drop-off. I think this is going to have a just as big of a drop-off, where it's going to drop by hundreds of thousands of units. And its airplay, though, is already huge, and its streams are already huge. So I have a feeling that it'll probably hold on probably for another week, if not two more weeks. We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together spent 3 weeks at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, non-consecutively, actually. I think its first two were in a row, and then it stepped away, and then it came back to number one. It's a little unfortunate you know, because if you're a chart watcher, you've noticed how Meghan Trainor's All About That Bass was knocking on number one's door. And this week,
knocking on number one's door.
Yeah, and this week it actually had a big gain. And it would have, had it not been for Taylor Swift and then the song at number two, which we have not talked about, had it not been for those two songs, Meghan Trainor would have been number one this week on the Billboard Hot 100. So if Taylor suddenly, everything collapses and she loses all of her sales, maybe, and the song at number two, which will probably have a natural decline in points as well because of reasons we'll explain in a moment, maybe Meghan could be number one next week. But I think Meghan could be number one in a couple of weeks if she holds on and if Taylor declines at the erosion rate that we expect her to decline at.
Yeah, it is interesting because, yeah, like you said, if Taylor Swift and the number two song, which we'll get to in a second, had just held off for one more week, Meghan Trainor would have been number one probably. It's almost like to dig into my bag of sports metaphors. It's almost like a very good baseball team made it to the World Series, but they met like a dynasty, like one of the greatest teams of all time. And it just was no contest. Like, you know, you can't, it's just so hard to compete with a Taylor Swift lead single debuting with the biggest debut of the year.
Yeah. By the way, we haven't talked about it, but Max Martin co-wrote this song. Max Martin, who has
written... this was a chart. All right, let's do a chart stat of the week callback to a couple weeks ago. Let's do it, man.
Yeah, let's do it. It's sort of a callback to a chart stat of the week that we talked about a few weeks ago when Max Martin, we said that "Bang Bang," which was the Jessie J, Ariana Grande, Nicki Minaj track, hit the top 10. That was his like 48th top 10 hit. I think he's since had a 49th top 10. And we pontificated. We said, well, if Bang Bang can go to number one, then that would give him his 18th number one single as a songwriter, breaking him out of a tie with Mariah Carey, who has 17 number ones as a songwriter, to become, you know, the songwriter with the third most number one hits. Well, Bang Bang hasn't got a number one, but Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, which Max Martin co-wrote, debuts at number one, giving Max Martin his 18th number one hit as a songwriter. And the only two songwriters who have had more number one hits now are Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's kind
of amazing. McCartney, John Lennon, Max Martin. Pretty incredible. So congrats to him. Congrats to Taylor Swift. It's, we're going to be playing the song. We're going to be talking about this song for months and months on this Pop Shop podcast. I hope you're ready, Keith.
Yeah. I am.
All right, so now that we have so much more to talk about, it's kind of a stacked week. It's almost a good thing that we don't have a special guest because we have to talk about so much more. Nicki Minaj, Anaconda, zooms to number two on the Hot 100, right behind Shake It Off.
There's that song that we didn't want to talk about that was number two, and we were teasing you.
We were teasing it.
It's the Anaconda. It slithers right up the chart. It strikes. It bites at number two.
So many more snake puns to come.
Puns
on puns. It was number 39 last week. It is number two this week. And is this all because of the music video?
It's well, I mean, the sales were strong too, but it was really all about the video. We were doing the math, and had the video not been a factor, the song wouldn't have even been in the top 10.
Okay.
But this happens a lot when we see music videos premiere, and we talked about this in the past few weeks with Ariana Grande's Break Free,
yeah.
And
Black Widow,
yeah. Both of them jumped to the top 10 thanks to the video, and it makes sense. It just makes sense. Anaconda was such a pop culture talking point in the past week between just the song itself and the Sir Mix-a-Lot sample, and then the video was so controversial and so racy and so Drake-y. And then you have Nicki's VMA performance with the wardrobe malfunction that may or may not have been a conspiracy malfunction. It may not have even been a malfunction. It may have just been Nicki wanting to, like, you know, fool us. If you believe TMZ. So all of that added up to a lot of excitement around Anaconda. And, of course, she also set the record for, I think, one day views on Vevo. She broke Miley Cyrus's record for the most views of a video in 24 hours. So all that adds up to a huge jump on the Hot 100. Nicki Minaj jumps to number two with Anaconda.
So when we started talking about the song 3 or 4 weeks ago, we kind of It debuted in the top 20, I believe. And then we were like, we don't know if this is going to be a long-lasting hit. It's kind of like a novelty. It has a Sir Mix-a-Lot right. sample.
Again, this is only its third week on the chart, so it's not like it's been around for a very long time.
That's true. Yep. That's true.
So 3 weeks ago, we said that we don't know if it's going to be around for a while because it could be just a fluke novelty hit.
Yeah, I mean, but now it's number two. It has, you know, the music video, say what you will about it. It certainly got people watching and certainly got people interested in the song. And it had, the 24-hour Vivo record now belongs to Nicki Minaj, graciously passed on from Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball. And, yeah, I mean, what do you think? This song is number two now because of the video. Do you think, same kind of question I asked about Shake It Off, do you think it can stay there? Will it fall off? Are the sales getting, you know, increasing week after week? Is radio latching on? What do you think?
Okay, I will just start
talking. That's a lot of questions.
I will start talking about Anaconda, and then you can jump in and tell me to stop. It's, again, all about the video, as I said. It wouldn't be in the top 10 had it not been for the video. The song is not even on the top 50 of the 50 position deep radio songs chart, which is the most popular songs across all genres of radio. It's just below the bottom of the chart. So it had nearly 25 million in audience on the radio. It had a 34% gain in radio. So that's good. It's still gaining in radio. Sales are actually pretty strong. I mean, they're not Taylor Swift strong, but they're actually strong. And then the streams are obviously enormous. Now, will those streams hold on? Like, will this video become a Wrecking Ball video where more, like, people that don't normally watch videos, will they start watching this video just because it becomes a meme, you know? Like, will this become more than just a song? Will it become a, like, entertainment, like, movement? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like, it becomes bigger than the song. And that's when you know that you really have something unique. And it's kind of like, you know, can this be her next Super Bass? Because Super Bass or Starships, I mean, Super Bass really was the pop culture moment. Starships was a hit for Nicki, but I don't think it really quite approached the Super Bass, you know, ubiquity. Ubiquitousness? I'm not even sure either one of those words, but you get the idea.
Ubiquity is a word.
And Nicki still hasn't had a number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100, believe it or not. She's gone really close, but she's never had a number one on her own, or not even with anyone else. She's gotten to number three.
Two now.
Hey, by the way, this is her biggest charting hit. I should have known that. She hasn't been any higher than number two, and this is now her highest charting hit ever, is Shake It Off. Why am I saying that? I'm crazy, Jason. Start talking. Take it over.
As Keith collects his bearings mentally and physically. I mean, that's what I thought, is that I didn't think she had a number one hit, and now she's getting ever closer. You have to wonder, again, it's just kind of a timing thing. If Taylor Swift didn't debut at number one, if Shake It Off came out this week instead of last week, maybe Anaconda becomes her improbable first number one song just because of the music video.
Yeah, it would have. I mean, that's why we love doing this. That's why we love saying, if it hadn't been for this, this person could have been number one. I mean, all this reminds me of a lot of things, but it reminds me, funnily enough, back in 1998 when the Titanic soundtrack was number one for like 18 trillion weeks on the Billboard 200 chart. And the person who I worked for then, who was the director of charts, Jeff Mayfield, managed the Billboard 200. I now manage that chart. And he was getting phone calls on the regular through Titanic's run from people asking him about Pearl Jam or Madonna, who both debuted at number two on the on the Billboard 200 behind
Titanic.
They couldn't
sink that ship.
And then they would ask things like, so had it not been for Titanic, Madonna would have been number one. And he's like, well, yeah, but duh. And they're like, well, can you say that? And he's like, oh, come on. But that's the hook. People like to talk about, had it not been for Titanic, Pearl Jam would have been number one. Had it not been for Taylor, Nicki finally would have had her first number one. I'm like, well, yeah, but that's the beauty of this. That's just the way it works.
Yeah. I mean, hey, man, all I'll say is player's going to play and haters going to hate. And whatever you can do to rationalize a number two not being a number one. You just got to shake it off. It's going to be okay. My last note is that, as I said at the top of the show, Magic's Rude falls to number five on the Hot 100. And Gary Trust noted in his Hot 100 breakdown. And if you haven't read this, if you're listening to this, check out Billboard.com. Gary Trust of the charts world does such a great job at explaining Taylor Swift and Nicki Minaj and everything going on in the top 10 this week. Check
way
that
better
out
than my rambling spiel a few minutes ago, by the way.
No. You're rambling.
No, really. It's okay. It's all right. It's Gary's expertise.
Yeah, but this is so. Back to Magic, Rude goes from number one to number five, and it's actually a pretty steep drop. It's usually when you fall out of the top spot, you go to number two, number three. It drops all the way down to number five, and it really feels like symbolic of like I said, summer's just done, man. I mean, Rude and Fancy kind of dominated the Hot 100 this summer, both number one for weeks on end, and now that's fallen off. It's Taylor Swift's time to shine, Nicki Minaj right behind her, both albums coming out before the end of the year. It's almost like a changing of the guard. I'm a little sad about this. I mean, you guys in LA have warm weather all the time. And New York is going to get cold in like a month or two. I'm a little sad. I'm a little glum, man.
Well, don't live in New York then.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for that.
That's the simple answer.
Anyway, moving on. Well, that was a pretty comprehensive breakdown of Taylor Swift, Nicki Minaj, and the rest of the top 10 of the Hot 100. So moving over to the albums chart, Wiz Khalifa scores his first number one album in three tries. Black Hollywood debuts atop the Billboard 200 albums chart. How much did it sell, Keith?
Why, it sold...
It sold
90,000 copies in the weekend ending August 24th, according to Nielsen SoundScan. It's his lowest debut out of his three albums, but
in terms of sales,
obviously, because this is his first number one. But you know, who cares? I care, but I mean, you know, he's number one. So yeah, if it's his, you know, it's his least successful opening week in terms of sales, but it's his most successful in terms of chart position. It's funny how that works out.
I really want you to like start writing like this, like
really
like,
crappily.
Oh, it's his lowest sales week, but who cares? I think it'd be fun. Just be the nihilistic chart.
No, dude. I'm not going to dumb down my writing to make it sound like the way I talk, which is often not very intelligent.
Oh, come on. You mean intelligently. So this
Shut
is a small
up. God.
I tease. I kid. So this is just kind of good timing for him because, like you said, it's his smallest sales figure yet. He debuted in, I think, 2011 was his first album, and then he had one at the end of 2012. But yeah, so 90,000 is his lowest sales debut, but number one just because...
All about the timing. He picked the right week to put out the album.
Yeah, it was kind of a sleepy week in terms of other debuts. Chase Rice, a tribute to Motley Crue, Nashville Outlaws.
Oh, yeah.
Which I have not heard, but I want to hear that album.
Sorry, that's me doing Dr. Feelgood. You should really listen to the cover of Dr. Feelgood on the album.
Have you heard it? Okay, I'm really interested in this. I've seen Motley Crue live, and I would like to listen to Nashville Outlaws, the tribute to Motley Crue.
Yeah, there's a number of people on it. I really, really like Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood album a lot.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great, great album. Same old situation, Dr. Feelgood, Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away, Without You. It's a great album. And I mean, Motley Crue has a lot of great singles and great work, period. But the covers album is fun just because it has all these country acts covering Motley Crue. So you have people like, you know, Leanne Rimes on the album, Florida Georgia
yes.
Line. Rascal Flatts is doing Kickstart
like
My Heart. But the particular cover that I thought was really unique, I mean, they're all interesting, is the Mavericks doing Dr. Feelgood. I can't even describe what it sounds like. You just have to listen to it because it's unexpected.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this and debuts in the top 10 this week. Going back to Wiz Khalifa just for a second, how have the singles from that album done, Keith, because if you think about Wiz Khalifa, he had a number one hit, the 999th number one hit of the Hot 100th history right before Born This Way became the 1,000th number one back in 2011. Black and Yellow was his number one hit, and since then he has had some moderate single success. Weed M Boys was the big hit from this album, but how have these singles done?
Well, you just said it. Weed M Boys would be the big hit from this album. It went to number 43 on the Hot 100. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of hit and miss when it comes to pop hits, because he's a core hip-hop artist, and he's dabbled a little bit in terms of pop hits. He's only had 5 top 10s on the Billboard Hot 100. Black and Yellow was number 1. No Sleep went to number 6. 5 O'Clock, which was a T-Pain record, but it featured Wiz Khalifa, went to number 10. Young, Wild, and Free.
That was a big hit.
Yeah, it was a big hit. It was Snoop and Wiz featuring Bruno Mars. It helps when you have Bruno to sing the hook. Went to number 7. He was featured on Payphone, Maroon 5's number 2 hit.
And oh, yeah. Wow.
Forgot about that
one. I totally forgot about that.
But he hasn't had a top 10 since Payphone back in 2012. So, but, you know, he's still significant, and he still has hits. It's just, it's far and few between where you find those kind of breakthrough pop hits because.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's been, I think that, I remember when Black and Yellow came out, and I think he was so surprised that song took off. I just remember him, he gave an interview, I think it might have been with Billboard, just saying like, it might have been with me actually, just saying like, I have such bigger hits than Black and Yellow in the can. Like, this is just like the prelude to what's coming from me. And then, you know, it's just so hard to predict these things because, you know, he's had top 10 hits, like you said, since then, but no other number one singles.
It was a pop culture moment, you know.
Yeah,
Black
it was.
And Yellow, Black. It was a pop culture moment. And this has nothing to do with necessarily chart performance, but I just want to say, whenever I've had the opportunity to speak to Wiz Khalifa on red carpets, and usually it's with him and Amber Rose at the same time, he's so nice and so cool and chatty, and he just talks about whatever, and he's just really cool to talk to. I mean, I know we're just talking about charts and stuff, but I just thought I'd volunteer that.
No,
it's always
very,
a hoot
very
to talk
nice
to him and Amber.
Very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
If you want to go back into the archives of Billboard.com, I did a live Q&A with him.
Ooh.
In early 2011, Babyface Jason, rocking a suit and, or not a, a suit and tie, but a nice
jacket.
Shirt and a tie.
Wiz Khalifa,
and also one other Wiz Khalifa anecdote. I was at the listening session for his second album, ONIFC, and Wiz Khalifa brought out literally the biggest blunt I've ever seen in my entire life, and just started smoking it while the album was being played back. And you know,
wow.
he's known as a pro marijuana artist and gentleman, and I've never seen a bigger blunt than the one Wiz Khalifa was carrying around on that night.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Moving on to next week's Billboard 200 albums chart. So the big release of this week, Ariana Grande with her sophomore album, My Everything. And I want to spend some time next week kind of talking about Ariana Grande and this album. My review of it is up on Billboard.com. Check that out. Keith, you are writing about My Everything and its sales projection today. And what is that sales projection at this time?
I believe I told you that it was going to be 160, if not a little bit more, I believe, was the number I quoted.
160 to 180?
Yes.
180,000. Not 160 copies. That would be devastating.
Yeah, 160. That's like Robin Thicke in Australia copies.
Oh.
Sorry.
No worries.
Yeah, so it's going to do like 160,000, if not more. We'll have a more exact figure. As the days tick by, because you know how this stuff works. You know, you have one figure on Wednesday, and that totally changes the very next day once you have, you know, more sales under your belt, so to speak. Comparatively, her last album did 138,000 in its first week. So not a huge jump compared to the last album. But there you go.
Yeah, so let me ask you about this number. And like I said, I want to kind of save this topic for next week. We're going to talk about Ariana.
So you're going to ask me about it, but we're going to save it too.
Yeah, I'm going to ask about it and save it. But
okay.
just really quickly, because we're already running over. This is a little bit underwhelming if this number holds, right? Just because if you think about someone like Ed Sheeran. If you think about someone like Lana Del Rey, which was, I think she did like 170,000. Ed Sheeran did a little over 200,000. I feel like Ariana Grande has gotten much more exposure than them, just in terms of the pop hits like Problem and Break Free, as well as Bang Bang, as well as the award show performances. I mean, I guess we'll see what happens when the number is all set in stone, but I feel like this is a little bit disappointing, right? Am I off base on that?
A little bit. If you're comparing her to Lana Del Rey and Ed Sheeran, who are album artists, Lana Del Rey still really doesn't have true hit singles. Like, she doesn't have hit singles in the terms of, like, Problem, like Ariana Grande's Problem. Lana Del Rey had a fluke hit with a remix of Summertime Sadness. Yeah. But she is seen as an album artist. We talked about this before. Ed Sheeran... yes, he does have hit singles, but really he's seen as like a singer-songwriter that has a body of work that really speaks.
True.
Ariana Grande is a pop singles artist. You know, she is very much like, you know, a Mariah Carey or a Madonna or, you know, a Katy Perry, where it's, you know, the pop diva with a whole swath of different kinds of sounds on one album, you know, with a bunch of different guest stars. It's very pop singles oriented, and that doesn't sell albums. Now, also, to compare, her last album probably sold a little bit more than it should have, all things considered, because I asked this question too, and I pondered it for a moment and then realized after speaking to people that that last album, it had like a sale price of, I think, like $7.99, like it was discounted in its first week.
Okay.
And I don't know if folks remember, but towards the end of Yours Truly, which was her first album, towards the end of its first week, it was discounted to like $3.99 on her website, and she had this offer going where if you bought the digital copy, you could get the opportunity to like meet her at a Christmas party, and because she was up against
Nine Inch Nails. Tamar Braxton. Yeah,
Tamar Braxton. She was up against Tamar Braxton, and there was this thought there was. They were sort of in a race for number one, and they pulled out all the stops. So Ariana probably sold a little bit more, probably like 10,000 more than she probably was going to.
Interesting.
So if you think of it that way, she's actually doing, you know, quite a bit better. But at the same time, she's also still a pop female star that is a pop singles artist that they just don't sell a lot of albums anymore.
Yeah. And when I say, you know, underwhelming, I just mean in comparison to Yours Truly. Obviously, this is a bigger number. This probably will be a bigger number than Yours Truly. It's probably going to be a number one debut. And we'll talk about all that next week. So, Keith, we're running out of time. But before we go, it is time for your chart stat of the week.
Hey. Okay, so... instead of doing a chart stat of the week based on Thursday, which is I normally talk about, you know, on this day, Thursday in history, I thought I would do a different day because that's a little bit limiting sometimes. So I'm going to take us all the way back to 1980. On August 30th, 1980, so if you're listening to this over the weekend, it'll be perfect. On August 30th, 1980, Christopher Cross... Remember Christopher Cross?
Oh, yeah.
The so-called king of yacht rock hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 with his Smooth Sailing single. The song would help Cross win all four of the top Grammy Awards the following year. The only artist to ever do so in the history of the Grammy Awards to win all four of the top categories in the same year. He won for Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best New Artist.
Yes.
And also, famously, a few years ago, Jimmy Fallon had Christopher Cross come on as his musical guest and sing a song, the name of which has just fallen out of my head. But
it's okay.
It features Michael McDonald singing the chorus. And Michael McDonald came on and was a surprise to Christopher Cross. Clearly was not expecting Michael McDonald to appear next to him all of a sudden in the middle of the song. Because if you watch the video, it's hilarious. Ride Like the Wind is the song I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
Which one's number two. But if you should go seek out that video. But still, back in 1980, this week, Christopher Cross hit number one with Sailing. And it's a fun song. And it was a great time for music.
You could say he really helped yacht rock cross over.
Crossover?
Crossover.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, Keith, thank you for that. Charts out of the week. I'm really glad I had to say that twice. This has been a fast and loose show. I blame it on it being the second Pop Shop podcast.
Yeah, I think all the really good stuff we threw away in the VMA podcast. So if you're listening to this now, if you made it all the way through, go back and listen to the VMA podcast. It's really so much better than the thing
that
we
just did. Yeah, if you're listening to this all the way through, you're probably shaking your head at both of us.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the man, you guys did really crappy this week. I'm never going to tune in again for that free podcast.
That would be a shame.
That would be a shame.
Next week on the Pop Shop podcast, we will talk about Ariana Grande's My Everything, the official sales number, and break that album down a little bit. We'll also be talking about a couple other things, including I kind of want to do like a summer wrap-up because next week is Labor Day, so that's kind of like the official end of summer. We might do some winners and losers of the summer, as well as a little bit of a fall music preview. You have that to listen to next week on the Pop Shop podcast. Keith, do you have any parting words?
Ride like the wind.
Ride like the wind we shall. And here is what Ride Like the Wind to play you out on the Pop Shop podcast. Thanks for listening and take care.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.